Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Let's talk about the newspaper biz, which, as you know, is not doing it all well. I'll discuss mayhem in the provinces, as revealed by our intrepid reporters for our provincial newspapers. We'll hear a replay of Stephen Colbert's famous, though little-known, number that he did on George W. Bush and his lapdog, the Washington Press Corps, a couple years ago. We'll have a couple relevant songs by David Rovix. Major daily newspapers across the country are having financial crises, as you've doubtless heard. The owners blame the Internet, and that may be a factor, but the main cause, to me, seems to be the greed of the owners. A corporation takes on huge debt in order to buy up a newspaper chain. Then to pay off the debt, they have to cut expenses. So they order the papers to fire half their reporters. Or a paper is sold to a corporation that doesn't give a dang about news reporting, but cares a great deal about maximizing profit. So they order the paper to double its profit margin, from 10% to 20%. To do this, the paper has to slash expenses, so they fire half the reporters. The readers get sick of the lousy reporting, cancel their subscriptions. The papers don't give a darn about readers directly, but they care deeply about advertising revenues. And advertising revenues will go down if the readership goes down. With lower ad revenues, profits drop, so the paper cuts expenses again by firing half of its remaining reporters. So the paper goes into an irreversible death spiral. Because of the new owners, capitalist greedheads who would rather have a crummy newspaper and 20% profit for 2 years, followed by bankruptcy, instead of a good newspaper and 10% profit for another 75 years. Ah, the magic of the marketplace, eh? You'll see the same magic at work when they succeed in privatizing your Social Security. But I think there's hope for the newspaper biz in the provincial dailies. Their national and international coverage always did suck, but now such coverage is no better in the prestigious major dailies, like the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, and the Hartford Courant, all three of which are owned by the same pack of semi-bankrupt greedheads, by the way. So the provincial papers no longer suffer in comparison. At least the provincial papers, like my local one, are good at local coverage, and the weirder the better. Where else can you find lengthy stories on local events, like the guy who is walking around naked except for a red cape and mask? Or, well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. For my source of local print news, I have long since bid adieu to the Hartford Courant, but there's a newspaper that covers primarily east of the river, as we call it, the Journal Enquirer, formerly the Manchester Journal Enquirer, now just the Journal Enquirer, as they're trying to spread out. I use the term east of the river, which is how we refer to things in central Connecticut, which reminds me of Gene Shepherd talking last week of the huge, huge gulf between Cincinnati, Ohio, to the north, and you cross the Ohio River, and just south of that, you have Covington, Kentucky, but you might as well be in a different time zone, given the contrast between the sophistication of Cincinnati and the loud, redneck, all-American, whatever wildness of Covington. Gene Shepherd worked on radio in Cincinnati stations in the 50s and lived in Covington. Doubtless the rents were cheaper. Well, here in central Connecticut, we have Hartford, which is bounded on the east by the Connecticut River. And as you go west from Hartford, you go through several expensive, educated, cultured, sophisticated suburbs. West Hartford, Avon, Simsbury, Farmington. But just head eastward along Route 84 across the river, and you get to East Hartford, Manchester, and perhaps worst of all, Vernon. Vernon is sort of lower middle class, unsophisticated, benighted Squaresville, though heaven to a satellite TV salesman, I am sure, and full of fat people. My son was briefly a Cub Scout, and the pack happened to be just over the border in Vernon. At a banquet, I got to meet several of my fellow Cub Scout parents, and every Scout's mother was fat, and 75% of their fathers were fat. Couch Potato City, that's Vernon. I spent a pleasant 11 years living in Hartford, renting a place in a nice old neighborhood that used to be all Italian and now is quite multicultural. And when I was able to buy my own house, though, like anybody else who could, I looked elsewhere rather than the city of Hartford, where the housing prices are incredibly high, the taxes are very high, and the insurance rates are unbearable. So I ended up in Manchester, just 10 miles east of the river. But I like Hartford well enough. Now, I think a lot of my peers here east of the river, I think some of them have never been through Hartford. Others have been through it on Interstate 84 driving somewhere else, and I'm sure they've locked their doors when they reach the Hartford border. That's a comment on the mindset of the east of the river people more than it is a comment about the dangers of Hartford. When my wife and I were living in Hartford, we threw a party and had guests from all over the place. Some of our friends were from east of the river. I remember one young woman came over, and she plopped down her handbag at the party, and I could see this handle of a revolver sticking up and say, hey, do you mind if I take a look at your gun? It's a very nice, lovely, stainless steel Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum revolver, which, you know, I don't have a problem with people carrying guns for self-protection or whatever if they want to, if that's their right. But, you know, there were kids running around at the party, so with her permission, I unloaded it and locked it up and gave it back to her before she left. But she doesn't always carry a 357 Magnum, but she thought since she was coming to Hartford, she better, because, like, what if her car broke down and next thing you know, she'd be, I think as she imagined it, would be besieged by the entire Ukabalakonga tribe. You know, the Ukabalakongas, that was in an old Mad magazine. There's all these stereotypic African tribes with bones through their nose, and they're always saying hugga bugga, hugga bugga, hugga bugga. And there's the Ukabalakonga and the Ukabalawanga. Anyway, you had to be there. Anyway, so that's the way things are at. If you live in Vernon, you probably think of Hartford as the devil's own city, and there's no sane reason you'd ever want to go there in the first place. So anyway, east of the river versus west of the river, we have similar cultural differences between redneck Covington, Kentucky, and sophisticated, if somewhat dull, Cincinnati, Ohio. But it got me thinking, people who were scared to death to drive the 10 miles to Hartford would drive 20 miles up to Enfield. Enfield is this town. It's half quaint little Connecticut farm town from way back and half shopping mall mecca. And as you can imagine, they don't fit together all that well. But, you know, the old part of Enfield is kind of quaint. But reading the newspapers, reading the Journal Inquirer, I find that just about every bizarre crime committed does not happen in Hartford. You know, Hartford has its more than its share of gang killings, and say nothing of felonies committed at Aetna Insurance. But it's at Enfield, where even people from Vernon will go, that has the weirdest crimes found in central Connecticut. So I thought I would start by reading some news items from Enfield, clipped from the Journal Inquirer, east of the river's foremost newspaper, and indeed somewhat better than the Hartford Current, which is low praise. Man accused of kicking neighbor's cat to death. Dateline Enfield. A local man is facing an animal cruelty charge after police say he kicked his neighbor's cat to death. A neighbor who owned the cat told the police that the man had kicked the cat in the face, picked it up, and threw it, then kicked it again. He then threatened her, saying, "Come over here and I'll show you what I'll do to you." The man later admitted to the police that he kicked the cat, said it was because the cat was sitting on his front step growling at him and wouldn't move when he tried to nudge it away. The cat died en route to the hospital. Everybody's name is given in this, but I think until the scoundrel is rightly convicted, I'll keep him anonymous. How about another? Dateline Enfield. A local man is facing 19 counts of risk of injury to a minor after he exposed himself to a large group of children on a well-traveled road last month while wearing nothing but a red mask and cape. Two women, each walking down the street with a group of children, reported the man to the police. A total of 19 children were exposed to the gentleman. The man told police that he had had 4 or 5 alcoholic beverages that afternoon and was waiting for his father to pick him up. According to witnesses, he had been walking around in a heavily traveled part of the Thompsonville section of town and, quote, was in plain view for an unknown number of people to see him walking around nude, unquote. He was arrested that day and released on a $25,000 bond. It's the red mask and cape, obviously, that raises this spectacle above the mundane and into the realm of art. Ah, and here's an item from Enfield. Woman accused of breaking plate over boyfriend's head. A local woman was arrested over the weekend after police say she broke a plate on her boyfriend's head during a domestic dispute. She was charged with second-degree assault and second-degree breach of peace. The live-in boyfriend told police when they arrived on the scene he couldn't believe that she hit him with a plate. The man told police that he and the woman were both intoxicated when they began arguing in the bedroom. The dispute turned physical, and the woman struck him on the head with a plate, breaking the plate in the process. The woman was released on a $20,000 bond and was to be arraigned today in Superior Court. And that's the news today from the provinces of Connecticut, east of the River Mayhem. We'll return with more late-breaking news items in another month or two. Why don't we take a break and hear some music? This is going out to all the good people of Enfield, Connecticut. It's by David Rovix, who said, in fact, that when writing this, he was thinking of another town in Connecticut, Danbury, out on the western part of the state. He also stressed that he thinks it could apply to just about any town in America these days.
I was young once, it was a long time ago. Things were different than I thought you should know. This old building was once a factory. We made Stetsons, your grandpa and me. It wasn't easy, but at least life was going down. There used to be a city in this town. Rusted rail yard had a hotel and a couple of stores. We had good times here between the wars. It wasn't paradise, but there was music in the street. Right there's where your grandparents first had a chance to meet. They got married in that church. I can still see her wedding gown. There used to be a city in this town. When the change came, it started one by one. First the layoffs, then the factory was gone. Then came the highways, suburbs and Walmart. That was the final blow that tore this place apart. But it seems like just last year, when there were people all around, there used to be a city in this town. Census says there's people here, but I think someone's confused. Just look out at these sidewalks, they're not being used. You know when a city dies, it doesn't die with grace. Just becomes a ruin, shouting this was once the place. I guess it's time to leave, but I don't know where I'd be bound. There used to be a city in this town. Used to be a city in this town. used to be a city in this town. There used to be a city in this town.
David Rovix. But let us turn away from small-town decay and depravity in Connecticut, as meticulously chronicled by the Journal Enquirer, and look some more at the press itself. Connecticut is known to have two old, distinguished, highly respected, and award-winning newspapers. The first is the Hartford Courant. Then down in Middletown, they publish My Weekly Reader. Now, this is a hard choice. My Weekly Reader has better international coverage. But The Current is written in an easier-to-read style, and it has bigger pictures. But even The Current doesn't practice the worst journalism in the country. For that, we would turn to the Washington Press Corps, the folks who brought us the Iraq War, with a little help from Paul Wolfowitz and Big Dick Cheney, I guess. The people who will never call a lie if it's uttered by somebody important. The people who will never ask a hard question of a politician for fear that the politician might take away the reporter's access. Helen Thomas possibly accepted. But the Washington Press Corps is at their best when they get together to celebrate their own importance. They do this best at their annual dinner of the White House Correspondents Association. The president and other Washington bigwigs usually attend, speeches are made, mild comedy skits are performed, and a smug, self-satisfied time is had by one and all. At the 2006 dinner, though, held on May Day, a dreadful mistake was made. They hired satirist Stephen Colbert as the main entertainer at the event. Colbert is host of a fake news program called The Colbert Report, broadcast on the Comedy Channel on cable TV, they tell me. Instead of soothing, gentle humor, Colbert got into serious, scathing mockery, both of President Bush and, worse still, of the Washington Press Corps. I'm told that within hours, much of the internet was buzzing with talk about Colbert's performance. Which was good, as no news outlet mentioned it. The TV networks, the New York Times, and other papers with a man in Washington all reported on the dinner, and they all described other acts and skits performed by other parties. Somehow, they all forgot to mention Colbert's mockery of the president and of his sycophantic, fawning press corps. The people who wrote these news stories, of course, were the very people Colbert had mocked. No censorship here in America. No siree. 2 days after the dinner, Democracy Now! Played a video of Colbert's entire talk. Here are some excerpts with emphasis on his critique of the press.
Wow, what an honor. The White House Correspondents' Dinner. To sit here at the same table with my hero, George W. Bush. To be this close to the man. I feel like I'm dreaming. Somebody pinch me. You know what? I'm a pretty sound sleeper. That may not be enough. Somebody shoot me in the face. Is he really not here tonight? Damn it. The one guy who could have helped. By the way, before I get started, if anybody needs anything else at their tables, just speak slowly and clearly into your table numbers. Someone from the NSA will be right over with a cocktail. Mark Smith. Ladies and gentlemen of the press corps, Madam First Lady, Mr. President, my name is Stephen Colbert, and tonight it is my privilege to celebrate this president, because we're not so different, he and I. We both get it. Guys like us, we're not some brainiacs on the nerd patrol. We're not members of the Factinista. We go straight from the gut, right, sir? That's where the truth lies. Right down here in the gut. Do you know you have more nerve endings in your gut than you have in your head? You can look it up. Now I know some of you are going to say I did look it up, and that's not true. That's because you looked it up in a book. Next time, look it up in your gut. I did. My gut tells me that's how our nervous system works. Every night on my show, The Colbert Report, I speak straight from the gut, okay? I give people the truth unfiltered by rational argument. I call it the no-fact zone. Fox News, I hold a copyright on that term. I believe the government that governs best is the government that governs least, and by these standards, we have set up a fabulous government in Iraq. And though I am a committed Christian, I believe that everyone has the right to their own religion, be you Hindu, Jewish, or Muslim. I believe there are infinite paths to accepting Jesus Christ as your personal savior. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe it's yogurt. But I refuse to believe it's not butter. Most of all, I believe in this president. Now, I know there's some polls out there saying that this man has a 32% approval rating. But guys like us, we don't pay attention to the polls. We know that polls are just a collection of statistics that reflect what people are thinking in reality. And reality has a well-known liberal bias. I stand by this man. I stand by this man because he stands for things. Not only for things, he stands on things. Things like aircraft carriers and rubble and recently flooded city squares. And that sends a strong message that no matter what happens to America, she will always rebound with the most powerfully staged photo ops in the world. The greatest thing about this man is he's steady. You know where he stands. He believes the same thing Wednesday that he believed on Monday, no matter what happened Tuesday. Events can change. This man's beliefs never will. As excited as I am to be here with the president, I am appalled to be surrounded by the liberal media that is destroying America, with the exception of Fox News. Fox News gives you both sides of every story, the president's side and the vice president's side. But the rest of you, what are you thinking? Reporting on NSA wiretapping or secret prisons in Eastern Europe? Those things are secret for a very important reason. They're super depressing. And if that's your goal, well, misery accomplished. Over the last 5 years, you people were so good. Over tax cuts, WMD intelligence, the effect of global warming, we Americans didn't want to know, and you had the courtesy not to try to find out. Those were good times, as far as we knew. But listen, let's review the rules. Here's how it works. The president makes decisions. He's the decider. The press secretary announces those decisions, and you people of the press type those decisions down. Make, announce, type. Just put them through a spell check and go home. Get to know your family again. Make love to your wife. Write that novel you got kicking around in your head. You know, the one about the intrepid Washington reporter with the courage to stand up to the administration? You know, fiction. Because really, what incentive do these people have to answer your questions after all? I mean, nothing satisfies you. Everybody asks for personnel changes. So, the White House has personnel changes. And then you write, oh, they're just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. First of all, that is a terrible metaphor. This administration is not sinking. This administration is soaring. If anything, they are rearranging the deck chairs on the Hindenburg. And of course, we can't forget, man of the hour, new press secretary, Tony Snow. Secret Service name, Snow Job. Toughest job. What a hero. Took the second toughest job in government, next to, of course, the ambassador to Iraq. Got some big shoes to fill, Tony. Big shoes to fill. Scott McClellan could say nothing like nobody else. McClellan, of course, eager to retire. Really really felt like he needed to spend more time with Andrew Card's children. Then, Mr. President, I wish you hadn't made the decision so quickly, sir. I was vying for the job myself. I think I would have made a fabulous press secretary. I have nothing but contempt for these people.
Cities are full of criminals. All of them are black. They'll shoot you for your shoes or to get a little crack. But the police are protecting us, locking up these thugs, making us all safer by being tough on drugs. There was a truck bomb in Baghdad, blew up the UN. These fanatics do not have care for innocent women and men. They don't like civilization, it's just destruction that they crave. There is no rhyme or reason for the way that they behave. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on the evening news. There's a war on in Colombia, and it's all about cocaine. The FARC is running drugs from Mexico to Maine. It's an ugly situation, but soon it will be whipped. We just need to send along more helicopter gunships. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on evening news. There was a bomber in Jerusalem, blew himself up on a bus. He was a funny-looking Muslim, not like one of us. He didn't like the Jews, and he says that God is great. I don't know what his problem is, he's just so full of hate. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on the evening news. Are plotting to blow up Washington, D.C. because they don't like freedom and democracy. They're fans of the Dark Ages. They are all around. They're marching from the desert sand and coming to your town. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on evening news. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on evening news.
Thanks for listening. New World Notes is produced in the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. For the Stephen Colbert routine, our thanks to democracynow.org. New World Notes is available off the air by internet stream, podcast, or MP3 download. For more information, start at the blog. We're at http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. The opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views of the presenter, station management staff, or our licensee. I don't know why I played a song about Danbury, and there's an even more famous one about Enfield. We'll go out listening to that. From Darkest New England, this is Kenneth Doust. Please tune in again.